Yeah, baby. Yeah.
So apparently these weird little intros where I just prepare myself as I set up to do these things is a new thing we're doing, guys. Okay. Okay, cool. Let's jump on in. Welcome to Potential Podcast with JCV. This is episode 25, if you count the trailer, and 24 if you don't. Now, I mentioned this in my previous letter episode, which is somewhere in the order of these, guys. I'm going to put a date stamp on all of them, or like a little episode count on all of them, simply just because it's tradition and I can't do an episode without it. But I don't know if I'm going to post them in the order that I'm saying that they're coming in. Or maybe I just should. This is holding me accountable. Whatever. We're here now. Okay. So, for this episode, I actually came up with this idea, weeks ago. And because it was around about the time when I was just like, look, there are topics and things that I truly enjoy and I really like. And I want to talk about them because I can talk at length about things I like. Duh. So, yeah, this episode is K-dramas in the global Hallyu wave. So, just to define the word Hallyu, because I'm just saying words, Hallyu is the wave of Korean dramas and Korean content that has filled the world. And that's what they call it. It's called the Hallyu wave. And I actually learned that word pretty early into becoming a fan of this type of content. So, yeah, like, honestly, the reason I wanted to do this episode is because I just wanted to chat about the fact that, like, it's interesting that out of nowhere, all of a sudden, we are all into Korean stuff. You know what I mean? Like, it's the skincare, it's the music, it's the dramas, it's the food. The food. Can I tell you something? And can I say an unpopular maybe opinion? I don't know if it's an opinion, because I like Korean food. Well, a lot of Korean food. But a part of me has a theory that because of the fact that everything is just so popular and hip and happening right now, that we tell ourselves that we like food that we don't. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Because I'm like, I've looked at some of the Korean food that is out there, and I'm like, look, at the end of the day, I'm a black woman in South Africa, which means that there's a lot of my own traditional cuisine that would be odd to someone else. You get what I'm saying? So personally, as a person, I'm like, I can understand a lot of the food they eat because I've just been observing. Also, another thing, I'm not doing this in the structure that ChatGPT wrote it, because I'm a human and ChatGPT is a robot. So we're here. So at some point, I'm going to sprinkle in the points that they gave me. And now we're here. Anyway, but like, because the really cool thing about Korean people, and I think that's another reason why maybe they are black K-pop fans, I don't know. This is my own theory. This is not based on any research. It's just me saying something. Is the fact that they eat a lot of, like, all the food that we eat. You know, they eat offal. They eat chicken feet. They eat tripe. You know, like, all of the things that, like, you wouldn't just naturally be like, oh, wow, it's an international cuisine. Do they eat the things that some people wouldn't necessarily like love, you know what I mean? But they do. And I think that's why I'm like, I'd do great in Korea, because I'm like, come on, spicy chicken feet. Also, the way I think they cook them, just based on how the people are eating them, you can eat it with the bone inside. So I think they like fry it so hectically that like the bone gets all crispy and you can just eat it. Oh, that sounds amazing to me. Because that's the thing that's always pissed me off about chicken feet, is the fact that I'm like, I'm doing a lot of work for not so much meat. I'm working very hard for meat that's like this much. You can't see me putting up my fingers, but this much. It feels wrong. What are we doing? You know? Anyway, yeah, let's jump into a little bit of the research that was done by the computer for me. So, yeah, I mean, statistically, there is such a huge, like, global reach for, like, K-dramas, because obviously in this case I'm going to focus a little bit more on K-dramas and everything else, obviously, that comes from that. But yeah, there's a lot of people who are talking about the fact that, like, K-dramas are a thing. There are whole articles, like, from Seoul to Sao Paulo, K-dramas have captured the hearts of millions, which is interesting because, like, it has such global, like, K-dramas have such global popularity, and it's such a large phenomenon that you're just like, how did this even happen? You know, like, what's even going on? And I have a theory on it, and I'm going to address it, but let's just talk a little bit about the rise of K-dramas and their popularity in other countries. So a K-drama is a South Korean television series known for drama, romance, and culture depth. The global spread, it's obviously, there's K-dramas on so many different platforms, Netflix being a very big proponent of introducing it to other sections of the world, especially the success in places like Latin America, Europe, and the Middle East. So, like, it's hectic. Like, people were just catching on. And I think Netflix found something and they, you know, they found the gap and they filled it. Also, K-dramas act as an introduction to Korean culture, language, and cuisine, as well as the music. I don't actually know as much with the music, but mostly with the other things, like the culture, etc. And a lot of people are just really into it. Personally, as a person, first, when I started watching K-dramas, I was like, look, there's a certain trope I truly enjoy. I haven't posted this episode yet, but I will, because I have done an episode on it. I'm a fan of the contract marriage trope, or like fake or legal marriage for mutual benefit, later developing into real feelings. I don't know why, I just like it. Like the arranged marriage, cult, like fake marriage, contract marriage trope. It's my ting, brother. It's my ting. And I unpack why I love it so much in the arranged marriage episode that I did. So I think that's probably going to come after this one. I'm still figuring out the order of these. I actually, ironically, have already recorded it. So if I ever say I don't have episodes to post, I'm lying. Anyway, cool. So there's a couple famous examples of these shows. And the really funny thing is the examples that ChatGPT gave me are actually not even my favorite examples, but we're here. Full House, which is iconic. Full House is actually about this chick who, I think, yeah, so it's her childhood home. I don't know if her parents passed away, because I watched this a very long time ago, but her parents passed away and, or like left, something like that. And her uncle or somebody sold the house and like started renting it out, but like she still lives there. So then now, obviously a lot of these, like a lot of these storylines seem crazy in real life. And when you say it out loud, you're like, that's strange, but you know, whatever, let's keep going with it. And then now what happens is, some famous dude needs somewhere to stay, so like he rented the house, and now he is like, yo, you're in my house, get out my house. And she's like, what are you talking about? And then it becomes a thing because he is famous, so then people spot them together and see them going into the house and stuff like that. And then it becomes a thing where they have to like act like they're together so that like the story keeps moving the way it needs to move. You know, those type of things. A lot of the things that happen in, like, K-dramas, well, not necessarily all K-dramas, because some of them are very realistic. Like, we've gotten to the place where, I don't even say production quality, because I don't like that word. I don't like those words to describe this, because I truly enjoyed Full House as is. But, honestly, I don't even actually think it's necessarily production quality. I think it's the westernization of K-dramas, which is another thing I really wanted to talk about, because yeah, bruh, me and Netflix are fighting right now, but we'll get there. Another example, so Full House from 2004, that's another thing, they use flip phones, it's very 2000s. Then there's Because This Is My First Life, where the characters enter contract marriage due to financial and social pressure. So in this one, it's the fact that, like, financially being a young person, in, I think it's Seoul, that's where they are, is just not potting the way it needs to pot. And being married means that you just get a lot of benefits. This one, I actually think, ironically, is quite close to reality, considering the fact that in Korea at the moment, they have a very low birth rate. And they also like have hectic brain drain. So like a lot of people are, one, not having kids, but not just that, but they're educating themselves, but then leaving and going somewhere else. And yeah, people are just not getting married and having kids. And now it's a thing where, and also people live a long time. Like, it's, you know what I mean? Like, people are living older and older. And without any young people, you end up having a situation where the country is under pressure to take care of their old people, but there are no young people to funnel the economy and like funnel money into the economy to keep it all going. So it's a big thing. They also have the same problem in Japan and a couple other countries in the world, actually. It's one of the reasons why being a digital nomad is such like a thing that's on offer for so many countries. So yeah, I actually might, no, I'm not going to do an episode on digital nomadism because yeah, I don't know enough about it. And I've done a little bit of research though, but for all those who don't know what a digital nomad is, it is someone who works for a company that is very comfortable for you to work from home, except you are working from another country. So you're completely, I guess, satellite, like you're completely working from another space or another, you can even work, like, yeah, work from another country, whatever it is. And there are actual digital nomad visas that are available from a lot of countries. You'd be surprised. You should actually Google this. A lot of countries. So I have done a bit of research. I'm like, I did a bit of research. So from a lot of countries. And what it is the selling point is, one, obviously you're coming into their country because you're being paid by a company that is not within the country. They're not pumping out money to sustain you. You're literally just bringing your money in and spending it in their country. So you're effectively helping their economy. It's actually quite a popular thing that a lot of people did post-COVID. I think people are still doing it. I'm not sure if it's as popular as it was once upon a time. But it's a thing. If you ever just want to break free from your life, brother, and you have a satellite or like a digital like job, not even necessarily a digital job, but you know, like a job that you can do from anywhere, it's something to consider. A really cool selling point that a lot of these countries offer as well is that visa holds you down for a couple years because they really do want you to come and stay. And after like 5 years or so, you get citizenship in the country. Sometimes they even, with this visa, in encouraging people to come, give you a little bit of settlement money. They give you discounts on like local properties and real estate and stuff like that. It's quite cool, actually. One that I remember off the top of my head is, I know, is it Mauritius? Yeah. Mauritius offers quite a nice little deal type of thing. And like you can come in there and yeah, the one thing that they do have as a requirement is you have to have a minimum salary. Yeah, a minimum salary that you receive a month from the job that you're doing, as well as some countries actually require a certain amount in savings, just so that they make sure that, look, you're not just not going to come here, quit your job, and then just bum around the country. Like, you know what I mean? Because obviously some of these countries have like national healthcare and stuff like that. So you can't now just be another burden. They need you to be able to survive in the country and stuff like that. They just want you to be a citizen without them like paying for you to be a citizen. So yeah, it's kind of like a win-win. And also the really cool thing is there's actually quite a few European countries on there. And as we know, certain passports sort you out, my brother. So yeah, getting like a nice little European passport will help you move around the world quite a bit. The real irony is the fact that you're going to go live in Europe so you can get a European passport so that, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird. It's like, I'm already where I would have needed this passport to get into. But I guess it also helps because there are some passports that get you into many, many countries. You know, American, European, those type of vibes. So, yeah. Why did I go into that whole situation? Oh, yes. The social pressures. Yo, that was a rabbit hole. That had nothing to do with what I was talking about. Let's get back to the episode. My word, Tracy. Anyway, So, the popularity of the trope resonates globally due to the universal themes of love, emotional tension, and the fantasy of destined romance. The Hallyu Wave and its global impact. So, as I said, the Hallyu Wave is a global spread of South Korean culture, especially through K-dramas and K-pop. The key drivers are K-pop, which, as we know, is driven by groups like BTS and Blackpink, who have been quite central to that. Streaming services like Netflix and Viki, who have made K-dramas available worldwide. Social media and fan culture. So international fan communities have amplified Korean content globally. I mean, if you don't know what a BTS army is, be happy, because those people are hectic. They're hectic. I say this as an XOL, and I'm just speaking words to you right now. But, like, if you ever want to Google what I'm saying, then you'll understand. I am an XOL. And it's weird because, obviously, in this day and age, how are people still having, like, fan wars? This actually goes down a different rabbit hole. Maybe I should do a separate episode on K-pop, because that's another thing. Yo, K-pop is a hectic, bruh. Like, there's a lot to it. And what's worse is I decided to become a K-pop fan in my ripe, too old for this nonsense age, and I just walked in and I was like, but the problem is you can't like fully really enjoy it without becoming that type of fan, like that knows these things. You don't have to engage, but you do have to know, just for the vibes you get. So it's a thing. Anyway, cool. So the cultural and economic impact. The Hallyu Wave has boosted South Korea's economy and cultural influence, improving its global image. Now, this is the point that I actually wanted us to talk about in the case of what my theory is, right? So I think, actually, I once heard someone say this. It was in one of these, I think it was like, yeah, literally like a Hallyu Wave documentary that I watched on YouTube, because I was like, this doesn't make any sense. When I first started watching K-dramas, I watched like, I watched like six of them back to back. I didn't sleep for days. Like, I was hooked. Like, I was in it. Like, I couldn't ever leave. And I was like, what is going on here? What is the magic? What is the vibe? So I Googled. I'm like, what's going on? And how did this all happen? And one of the interesting points that was made in this documentary was the thing that Koreans pride themselves on, ironically, is they like to say that they know how to copy well. And how that works is they copy, they do what other people have been doing, and then they find ways to improve it and then top it. And that's pretty much what I think they've done with many things. Specifically, I mean, as we know, and if you don't know, now you know, Samsung is actually a Korean brand. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, America and Korea are fighting over people's cell phones in the world. Like, it's a real thing. And they have similar technology. You know what I'm saying? Like, all of that stuff. Because Samsung's like, nah, I also want to be able to do it. So that's just one thing where it's like, I'm going to bite off of whatever it is you're giving, and I'm also going to do it. But yeah, it's a lot of things. It's technology, it's systems, it's cars, it's a lot of just the industrial things that have proved successful in other countries or other spaces. They've taken, duplicated for themselves, and then during the course of that duplication, learnt and understood the technology, and then figured out how to make it better. And that is one of the things, like, I'm not even being offensive when I say this. This is an actual statement made by a Korean person. So, yeah. Anyway, so that's something interesting. And then the thing that also just comes to mind as well is I realize that Korea is very comfortably happy to say that they are trying to become, not even trying to become, they've become, but the goal is to become a very big soft power. So kind of following the same space as America. Granted, America is big, has military, has money, all of those things. So yeah, but from a soft power perspective, they're like, look, that one's easy to copy. Just create the content that people like, the music, the content, the vibes, and then pull people towards us. The really cool thing is the fact that a lot of the content, well, the content I watched at the beginning, Netflix, like I said, we have beef, and we'll talk about my beef with Netflix now. But generally the content is quite true to Korea and the way they roll. Obviously, there are things that are modernized and very Americanized because, as we know, the reason, well, not the only reason, but a big reason that South Korea and North Korea are fighting is because of the fact that South Korea has a very strong relationship with the US and they've become quite Western, and North Korea is like, nah, we need to keep our, you know, Korean values and value our Korean values, and you guys are out just selling us out to the West. So obviously, like I said, that is Tracy quickly explaining politics. Please do better research. Don't trust me to explain what's going on. But it's just one of the things that they're fighting over. Obviously, you know, dictator and other stuff. But anyway, so as part of kind of the wave and the popularity and all of that stuff, is a lot of stuff has been westernized. But they have really kept a lot of the core Korean values, like the language, you know, all of that stuff, quite rooted in the culture, which is cool, including the food. Because an interesting thing is, obviously, they have fried chicken and all of those things, but like, even with fried chicken, bruh, they improve that. Like, they're like, okay, you make Kentucky fry, but I make Korean fried chicken. Huh? Huh? What you gonna say? What you gonna do? What you gonna, what you gonna do? So, like, that's the type of stuff that they've, like, kind of done. So they've replicated what is going on with American space, especially in the space of like soft power and providing the world with content and like a cultural, I guess, a cultural guide, so to speak. Because honestly, it all comes back to, and this is obviously me throwing in a little biblical thought or like a little God thought, but it came to me that we are all built to worship. It's just what we choose to worship that, you know, makes or breaks us. And in this case, it's exactly that. Because they really cracked the code on giving, like, the people what they want. Also, another thing that has happened is, and these are my own theories. Please, please, guys, don't research this like I looked for it somewhere. I didn't. I've just spent years observing what is going on in that space. And this is what my theory is. So my theory is, the reason K-pop bands do as well as they do is because what the Koreans did was they went through all of the history of entertainment in America and they realized that there are certain portions they really want to take and like, you know, replicate. Because I'm looking at just the boy bands and I was like, hold on, wait a minute. They start training these kids from like 13, bruh. I'm not joking. Like, some of your favorite K-pop people have been wanting to be famous since they were like 12, as in were trainees at like a 12 or so or whatever, wanted to be famous from younger and then only could sign on to be trainees from like 12, 13 or something like that. And then they go through years of training. I'm talking years of training. Like, they could be training for anything from 5 to 6 years or whatever it is. And then they debut. And sometimes you go through that training and don't debut. That's a real thing that happens. Anyway, so like, that's just something that actually was done once upon a time, especially in the days of the Backstreet, well, not necessarily, yeah, no, like the Backstreet Boys, the NSYNCs, like those boy bands. I mean, I don't want to say this man's name, the man that made Making the Band, he understood that clearly there's a formula to this thing. Simon Cowell, he understood clearly there's a formula to this thing, because they realized that there is a formula to putting together a couple talented people as a combination and making them stars. And that's what Korea recognized and started doing it. Granted, I do not want to say that they just went and bit it off and like didn't do their own like stuff, whatever it is, because at the end of the day, you still have Soteji and the boys and, you know, a lot of historical K-pop that was giving the same vibe. But I think they bit off of especially that like wave, like Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, O-Town, all of them groups, Westlife, all those people. And they studied how that worked and just picked the best parts and then used it in their ways of creating groups. Because one of the big things in K-pop, and we don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, but it has to be stated, is the fact that a K-pop band or a K-pop artist is generally owned by the fans. It's strange, it's weird, but it's the truth. Like, we don't know about their personal lives. We don't know what they do in times where they're not in front of us or singing or doing whatever they need to do. We just know that this is my favorite singer, and the personal life he has is the personal life that has been created, curated, built by a team of industry people. And that is what you interact with. His personality, etc., etc., etc. She or he, because this also applies to girls and the girl groups and also solo artists. And we've also realized, and this is why my theory is just being backed up by random things I've observed, is when the personal life, like the actual real reality of this human being a human, comes to the fore, people lose it. The fans lose their damn minds. Because, I mean, case in point, as a person who's a fan of EXO, one of our members, his name is Chen. What is Chen's actual name? No, it's not Kim Jong-un. What is his name? Oh, Kim Jong-dae. So Kim Jong-dae / Chen. Actually, I think, yeah, we found out via the streets that he's having a baby. The kids lost it. They were putting out petitions to have him thrown out the group. They were disappointed. They were making posts. Like, I'm just like, guys, the day the Lord gave us internet, I was like, are you sure? Are you sure? Anyway, so yeah, they ripped him an almighty new one. Luckily, the really great thing about XOL is because of the fact that we've been fans for so long, a lot of people were like, stop it. You guys are being ridiculous. This man can still sing. It's not that deep. We move on. But that's a real thing that happens, because there is a level of ownership that is given to K-pop stans over their idols. And that is something that's a little bit linked and a little bit reminds me, because as a person that was a fan of the initial boy bands, you know what I'm saying? The Backstreet Boys, the NSYNCs, the Westlifes, all those guys. Like, I was there. Live Jive. You know what I'm saying? I was pivotally invested in Justin and Britney's relationship. I was there. And I still, to this day, can sing my favorite Backstreet Boys songs word for word. Because it was a time, my friends. Oh, it was a time. Anyway, so having observed or being there to be like, I guess, the teenager that could have appreciated that time, and now watching how K-pop groups run, I'm just like, this is the same thing, bro. It really is. But back then, obviously, there was a formula. The cute one, the sexy one, the bad boy, blah, blah, blah. Like, that whole formula. They replicated it, but not necessarily exactly the same. It was more just, you do need to have, like, a young one, you know what I'm saying? But, like, more of a Korean version of that replication. I mean, we've seen it now. We just saw, what's that documentary? I forgot what it's called, but it's the documentary that created Cat's Eye. The K-pop group that only has one Korean in it. Is it one Korean, two Korean? I don't know. It's the K-pop group with different people from different cultures. Lost, but okay. I'm like, you know what? If it makes you happy, I'm happy. But I personally, as a person, I'm okay. Not gonna lie though, that touch song bangs. Yeah? That touch, hingy, ratch. That's some kind of a survivor. I'm not even gonna hate on them. That song is a vibe. So I'm not even going to sit here and hate. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, yes, I'm back. So yes, they did the reality show and then created this multicultural K-pop group. But that's what I'm saying, is the manufacturing of a star is a real thing, and it's very, very, very possible. And I think that's exactly what has happened in the world of K-pop. And it's actually part of, I personally think, the reason that there are so many fans is because it's clean, it's there's not a lot of scandal. There's not a lot of, now I have to watch someone become a woman or become a man. You know what I mean? Like, you don't go through all of these transitions because, I mean, as we know, with Americans, it's a lot of the, they start out sweet, cute, Disney, and then you watch their transition to becoming a woman. All of a sudden, they're flying from side to side on, what's that thing? A wrecking ball. Half naked. It's a lot. Hannah Montana, wait, see, tend on us. Anyway, so none of that happens because just observing my own personal favorite group, like, their personalities have evolved, and, well, let's say their public personas, because I don't know these people. Their public personas have evolved and grown, and their music has been where the evolution and growth has happened. But, Oxalayo, you don't know what's going on in that man's life. You don't. You just don't. And the little bit you do know is not enough. You know what I'm saying? Because it's all curated. It's all thought out. I mean, they have specific outfits chosen for them to go to the airport in. So that they can... You know what I'm... Like, it's a thing. Case in point. Who is it? Sehun is sponsored by Dior. So when Sehun goes to the airport, he needs to be wearing Dior Couture. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's all these tiny little details that all come together to create the idol they present to you. It's not that this is a human who happens to be talented and we're here for it. That's not how they roll. It's not messy. Also, just because of the fact that generally Asian cultures are very much about respectability and making sure that you, you know, protect your honor and stuff like that. So I think it just all works together. And I think other people or the people outside of the Asian space type of thing have identified and loved the fact that you can just have pure good entertainment. Granted, K-pop has gotten a little bit spicy of late. I'm just like, yo. But also, Kipo J-Park and those people where I'm just like, yo. The thing is, J-Park makes a banger. Huh? That man makes a banger. Like, what's that song? Is it Candy? Candy is nice. And then there's another one. All I Wanna Do is it All I Wanna Do? Yeah, that All I Wanna Do. That's a banger as well. Like, he makes really good R&B. It's just, it's a lot. I'm like, stop trying to be the Korean Chris Brown, dog. It's a lot. It's a lot. But also just because I personally enjoy the fact that I'm listening to music. Granted, I don't understand it, so maybe also I might be singing lyrics that are also sideways. But I told myself that I actually don't want to understand them until I understand them. And I'm enjoying myself. Let's leave me alone. I know it's ignorant. Okay? Anyway. So, what was I saying? Oh, yes. So, yeah, the more Western style of things. I mean, personally, as a person, armies don't come after me, but I liked BTS before they went full American, because, hi, why do they have whole albums in English? What are we doing? It's K-pop, what are we doing? Like, I just, I don't know, but it's funny, obviously, because that's one of the biggest laughing points of K-pop is the fact that there are people outside of Korea who are fighting harder for K-pop to stay Korean than people inside of Korea. People inside Korea couldn't be bothered. But yeah, we out here, I've become one of those people, I hate to say it, it's the truth, where I'm like, I'm a K-pop purist, but we here now. So yeah, oh yes, now my beef with Netflix. Now, this is the reason I have beef with Netflix. I got Netflix, right? So the thing is, I started watching K-dramas before I had Netflix. And back then, because of the fact that I got to decide the show, vet it, read through, whatever it is, like, I got to watch exactly what I wanted. It was always delivered on the brief. Now, the thing is, Netflix has made me lazy. They have made it convenient. And I'm like, okay, cool, the algorithm's gonna serve me things that I like. Do you understand how many? I think it's like 6 Netflix shows where I was like, that was a complete waste of my time. And the problem is, keep in mind, when I say complete waste of my time, each of these shows is like 16 hours of your life. Do you understand what 16 hours of your life is? Do you get what I'm saying? I said 16 times, let's say 5 or 6, right? So 2 is 32. 32 plus 32 is 64. That is a good over a week of my life watching shows that were trash just because I thought I could trust Netflix and their little percentage match thing. Ugh, those people don't know how to make shows. And then also, the Netflix originals where they make their own. I'm like, look, I want to support you guys, you know, because you're sending money into a country that needs it chilled. Whatever. Also, banged it out with Squid Game. Can't even hate. Sharp. Right. But, like, I'm watching this show right now. What is it called? Was it Love? There we go. And it's a Netflix original. Oh, my gosh. It's good, right? But then I realized the reason I like it is because of the fact that they are using all American references. Like, the music is a Korean version of an American song. The way the story is being told is very American in its structure. Like, I sat there and I'm like, I'm just watching an American show that is in another language. That's it. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because some people really like that. And as long as it's sending money into the country, it means they're sending money into a country that is going to make a show I like more. So, cool. Help the economy of where they produce the things I like. It's just the fact that, yo, I can't. I'm tired. I'm fighting for my life here, guys. Like, Netflix can't suggest things. And I'm like, you have annals and annals of entertainment. So many things in this folder. So many things. Netflix is the friend that has unkept Wi-Fi at their house that used to pirate for all of us. And we would go to their hard drive and copy. But yo, failing at doing the thing it's supposed to do for me. I just, yo, there was one show it said that was 90% match. Never have I been so upset in my life, because I gave it a chance simply based on that percentage, because I thought, hey, it's an algorithm. I told it what I like. I've been double liking shows that I absolutely love on Netflix, thinking, stay here. I created what you need to be looking at. Stay here. This thing decides to itself, it's going to throw a random show that, oh, jeez, oh. I'm just getting angry. I need to calm down. Anyway, so yeah, those are my theories on, you know, the K-pop, K-drama, well, more K-drama space. I mean, I gave you my K-pop theory. There's a lot more to K-pop, and if ever I have the energy and the chias in my heart to actually sit down and unpack K-pop, I will, but we're not going to do that for now. Anyway, so yeah. The evolution of K-dramas has expanded to tackle more diverse and complex themes, including mental health, gender roles, and social class issues. There are some challenges and opportunities, though, because there's production pressures, there's maintaining global appeal, and the opportunity for international collaboration in the future. So this, the globalization has either, I don't know if it hurts. It's kind of like, it's the same as gentrification. It's a thing where you want the money in the neighborhood, but you don't want the money to not go to the people in the neighborhood. You know what I mean? And in this case, I'm very much hoping that as much as they're creating like Netflix series that are pretty much just American shows, like the money is, you know, flowing through the country. And it's not just Americans coming in, tapping in, using, you know, like using your resources and your people and whatever it is, and then cashing in and leaving. Because that's another thing that's a little bit of a problem. Because that's another, like, the whole maintaining global appeal. Like, the appeal was the fact that you weren't trying to appeal to me. You know what I mean? Like, made me feel niche, made me feel like I discovered something special. Like, granted, I also cannot be trusted. Cannot be trusted, so simply because of the fact that I have a certain taste. Like, I've always had, a thing for, I guess, Asian cultures. I was a very big Bollywood fan. I still have a favorite Bollywood movie, like, that I watch when I need comfort, that type thing. Which reminds me, maybe I should watch a Bollywood movie today. That didn't need to be recorded, but we're here. Anyway, so generally I like to watch something in a foreign language. Subtitles don't bother me. It's also dubbing. Whoever is watching something with dubbing, what are you doing? Unless it's anime. Because at least with anime, their mouths don't move like humans. But dubbing, don't do this. You're just insulting the show. Have you ever watched dubbing that's so bad where you're just like, what are we doing? Oh my gosh, though. There is some dubbing that's super funny, though. What is it? Is it ETV? I can't remember. One of the channels on TV. Like, actual, like, terrestrial TV. It's, what is it? I think it's like Lebanese dramas, right? but they're dubbed in Afrikaans. Entertainment, my friends. Do yourself a favor when you have a second. I think I watched another one where it was like a telenovela, like an actual Spanish telenovela dubbed in Afrikaans. I have never, after Seven Dalan, I have never cared more about an Afrikaans show in my life. They're so good. They're so good. Anyway, when you have a second and you have some time, get involved. That is the only dubbing I approve of. Outside of that, how dare you? Don't do that to the show, because dubbing is trash. Read the subtitles. Don't be lazy. Anyway, that's done. Okay, so yeah, so the global appeal of K-dramas is actually quite interesting, especially just seeing how people are like in it. You know, like there's a lot of people who are now creating content and also getting into the space. I mean, case in point, the fact that there is now a multinational K-pop group, which I don't know if that makes sense to me. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, I mean, I think you should genuinely watch a K-drama at least once in your life. Shame, if you're only going to watch it once just to see what I'm talking about, then no, I never approve of dubbing. There's no version of me that will approve of dubbing, and I will never put that of me talking on the internet approving of dubbing. No. Just watch it with the subtitles, please, for me. For me. You don't even have to watch all the episodes. Actually, no, you do need to watch all the episodes, because it's like a really long movie. But yeah. Anyway. Yeah, that's me and my opinions on K-dramas. I really did want to do this episode simply because there are... I haven't posted the arranged marriage episode yet. And I'm not sure if this is going to go before or after it, but they will be close to each other. Simply just because of the fact that the trope is interesting to me, but I figured it would be interesting for us to talk about, like, what it is that kind of brought me to realizing that I have a thing for this trope, and then we can talk about what it is that brought me to recording that episode. So yeah, thank you for listening. This has been A Potential Podcast with Tracy Lee. I hope this podcast and I live up to our potential. Okay, love you, bye.